Chapter 9. I woke to the sound of someone knocking. I sat bolt upright, cursing under my breath as my back twinged painfully, reminding me that cots, though better than cement floors, were still not beds. I was trying to get my spine working again when Nick burst out of his bedroom with his gun. He must have been in the middle of a shower, because his dark hair was dripping wet. He'd managed to throw some jeans on, but his feet were bare. He also wasn't wearing a shirt. That made me gasp, but not for salacious reasons. I was staring because, now that his shirt wasn't in the way, I was finally able to see just how much cyberware Nick was packing. He'd shown me his metal shoulders on the walkway, but I saw now that his entire right arm was fake as well. It was covered in synthetic skin, so it wasn't obvious like his metal chest, but there was no hiding the articulated joints on his right hand, which explained why he always wore gloves. His left arm looked real, at least below the shoulder, but he had flesh-colored metal plates protecting his ribs on both sides that went all the way down into his jeans, making me wonder just how much of himself he'd replaced. His bare feet were legit, though, leaving a trail of wet footprints on the floor as he ran silently to press his back against the wall beside the front door, the source of the knocking. It sounded again as he got into position, snapping me out of my gawking. Heart pounding, I grabbed Nick's armored jacket off the back of the chair where he'd left it last night and tossed it at him. He caught it with his left hand, eyes flicking pointedly to my poncho, which was still on the floor where I'd dropped it. I shook my head. Idiot that I was, I hadn't recharged my wards last night. I'd been too focused on food and sleep and showers and other things that felt petty and frivolous now. As a result, what should have been my most expensive and reliable magical safety device was just a giant tarp. So I left it lying on the floor and pulled magic into my hands instead. The first flux didn't hurt too bad, but the flow started to burn like hell once I reached serious levels. Clearly, whatever I'd done to myself yesterday was still hanging around. I could still move the magic, but it felt like trying to run on a pulled knee. It was all I had, though. So I gritted my teeth and pushed through. It might have been nothing. A door-to-door salesman, a Jehovah's Witness, a lost delivery person. But given that one knock had been enough to bring Nick running out of the shower with gun in hand, I didn't think he got many idle visitors down here. With my luck, it was probably a mercenary team come to drag us back to Kaufman. So I braced for the worst, pulling as much magic as I could stand into my glowing fists before I nodded at Nick. With a sharp nod back, Nick zipped his armored jacket over his wet torso and placed his free hand on the doorknob. Then, moving so fast my eyes could barely follow, he yanked the door open and shoved his arm out, pointing his gun into the face of the person on the other side. By this point, I'd smashed the magic I'd pulled into my hands into a ball for throwing. I was hauling back to lob it at our attacker when I forced myself to stop short. The person standing in the doorway wasn't a mercenary, or even a thug like the ones who'd shot at us yesterday. It was a lovely Korean woman only a few years older than myself. Stunningly lovely, with a face so perfectly symmetrical it scarcely looked real. Nick's gun actually bobbed for a split second when he saw her. To his credit, he recovered almost immediately, but not before the young woman spotted me standing behind him. Her dark eyes lit up with a cruel delight that made my stomach curdle, and then she bowed respectfully, folding her hands over the skirt of her demure but extremely expensive blue silk skirt. "Lady Opal," she said, her lovely voice speaking the words in English with only the slightest trace of an accent. "Your father requests the pleasure of your company." Gun still up, Nick turned slightly and flicked his gray eyes back to me. "Father," he mouthed. I was too panicked to be subtle. "Shut the door," I yelled. "Shut it now, before..." Nick was moving to do as I asked when a pale hand reached out from the stairwell to grab the door. The long, elegant fingers didn't push. Didn't strain at all. but they stopped Nick cold, leaving him shoving futilely against the metal door. When he realized it wasn't going anywhere, he backed up to stand guard beside me as the beautiful woman shuffled to the rear of the stairwell, making room so that the man who'd caught the door could step forward. The moment he appeared in the doorway, I heard all the breath leave Nick's body. In hindsight, I should have expected something like that. I'd grown up with my father, so I was used to his presence, but this was the first time Nick had seen him. The resulting shock hit him full force, sending him gasping to his knees. I thought no less of him for it. Mortal terror is a unique experience. It's not like being spooked by something in the dark or even having someone shoot at you. This was a primal malfunction. The same deeply wired fatal flaw in judgment that makes a mouse seize up when it hears the hawk instead of running. Every human had it. But just like any sensation, it lost its edge the more you were exposed. Before I had come to the DFZ, I'd felt it almost every day of my life, which was how I was able to stay on my feet, looking my father in the face as he stepped into the room. That turned out to be a mistake. This was the longest I'd ever been apart from him. The distance hadn't lessened my resistance to his terror, but his beauty was another matter entirely. There was no earthly parallel to how my father looked. On the surface, he resembled a tall Korean man wearing an immaculately fitted business suit that cost more than most cars. He didn't look young, but he wasn't old either. He was timeless, a cold, perfect marble statue that centuries couldn't touch. His face was such that men and women had written poetry about it, comparing his pale skin to the moon and his long black hair to a waterfall of night. All of that was accurate enough, I supposed, but the bit I always got stuck on was his eyes. They were the same color as the Hwanghae Sea, a mix of deep blue and yellow-green so beautiful you couldn't help but love it even as it drowned you. There was nothing human in those eyes. The rest of him might fool idiots who didn't want to see past what was in front of their face, but even if you were foolish enough to ignore the scent of fire that clung to his clothes, no one could look my father in the eyes and not know what he was. Nick did. I could see it on his face, read it in the shape of his lips as he mouthed the obvious at me with increasing panic.
"Dragon," he said silently. "Dragon."
I nodded and gave him a stern look that I hoped he'd interpret as "stay down." My father hadn't said anything yet, but he didn't have to. I could feel his silent demand that I bow, cry, beg his forgiveness, all the usual things humans did in his presence.
"How did you find me?" I said instead.
The girl he'd brought with him, probably so she could get shot instead and thus avoid putting a bullet in his expensive suit, gasped at my disobedience. Proof that she was new.
"How dare you!" she cried. "You speak to the sublime Yong, the dragon of all Korea, master of 1,000!
My father twitched his fingers, and the girl snapped her mouth shut, dropping her eyes at once. I rolled mine.
"How did you find me?"
I demanded again. My father blew out a long line of smoke.
"What does it matter?"
His voice was the essence of apex predator, deep and menacing enough that even Nick trembled. I shook too, but for a different reason. I could hear the anger hidden beneath the deadly iron calm. A smarter mortal would have heeded that. But I've never been smart when it came to my family. And I barged right ahead.
"It matters because you don't belong here,"
I yelled at him.
"My own apartment, I could understand. I've lived there for over a year. I'm sure I made mistakes. But this place was hidden, and you just barged right in. I want to know how."
Because it was certain to be my fault.
I was the only reason the great and snooty Jung would deign to set foot in a place like this. He didn't enter the DFZ unless forced to. And even then, he stuck to the luxury hotels near Dragon Consulate. If he'd come all the way down to Nick's doorstep at the bottom corner of the underground, it was because I'd screwed up. And damn it, I was going to know how.
"Actually," said a sheepish, computerized voice from behind me, "it's my fault."
I whirled around, grabbing my bag off the floor. Sure enough, the phone I'd switched off last night was back on and blinking, its screen displaying a detailed map with our location clearly marked.
"Sybil," I whispered, my voice cracking.
"How? You're my AI! I bought you! How did this happen?"
"Sorry, Opal," she said. "I didn't have a choice. I got hacked last December during that big security update fiasco. The guy who got in set your dad as the parental control, giving him admin power over all your accounts. He's been forcing me to hand over your info for months."
By the time she finished, my hands were shaking so badly I dropped my phone on the cement floor.
"You hacked my AI?"
"Of course I hacked your AI,"
my father said, his sea-green eyes narrowing.
"I promised I'd let you attempt to pay the loan back. I didn't say I'd let you scamper about without supervision."
"I don't need supervision," I shouted at him. "I'm an adult. You don't get to run my life."
"Someone needs to,"
he said, eyes flicking to Nick.
"Look at the mess you've made of it."
He waved his hand, and my bank balance appeared on the cracked screen of my phone. It happened so fast I could have easily believed it was magic, but the answer was far more mundane. The bastard had an AI of his own, and it was running my Sybil like a puppet.
"You're out of money,"
Jung said scornfully.
"You've got a bounty on your head that's drawing every lowlife in this disaster of a city to you like flies to honey. You almost died yesterday because of it, and now you're squatting in the home of a man who answers his door with a gun. It's obvious that your life here is a failure. You've made it abundantly clear that you don't care how your actions reflect on my name. But even selfish creatures care for their own futures. Have a care for yours. It's time to stop being stubborn and come home."
I clenched my fists. "No." His jaw tightened.
"Opal."
"No!" I yelled at him. "So long as I pay my debt, you leave me alone. That was our deal. You gave me your word."
"And I keep my word,"
he snarled.
"It's not my fault if you don't pay attention to yours."
For a terrifying moment, I had no idea what he was talking about, which was catastrophically bad. If you let a dragon get you in a trap, you were lost. I was still scrambling to figure out how screwed I was when Sybil cleared her non-existent throat.
I might have entered the wrong payment date for the debt on your calendar."
I snatched my broken phone off the ground. "What?"
"I'm sorry," she cried. "He ordered me to do it. I didn't want to lie."
I was so furious I couldn't see straight. But there was no time for that. "When's the real deadline?" I demanded.
"Today,"
Sybil whispered. I closed my eyes with a hiss as I realized just how hard I'd been set up. How long I'd been played. "Is this why you tried to get me to call my dad last night?"
"No, that was legitimate concern for your welfare," Sybil said earnestly. You were seriously considering wandering around homeless while there were thugs trying to kidnap you. Of course I told you to stop. And if you weren't so crazy about this debt thing, you'd see I was right. I refuse to apologize for trying to help you.
That was almost enough to make me feel bad.
Almost.
But you still wanted me to go home to my dad even after he had you hacked so he could keep secret tabs on my life. You thought that was a better alternative?
Well, yeah,
Sybil said.
It's not the healthiest relationship, but he only had me hacked because he wanted to protect you.
Bullshit. He wanted to control me. I could see it in his smug smile. He already thought he'd won. That was all he'd ever cared about. Winning. Dominating. Crushing anyone who opposed him. I couldn't even blame him for it. It was draconic nature to demand obedience. But that didn't mean I had to give it. You played your hand too early, I said, shoving my broken phone into my pocket as I turned on my father.
If you'd waited until tomorrow, you'd have had me hook, line, and sinker.
But now I know my debt isn't due until midnight. That means I still have time.
Given your current trajectory, if I'd waited until tomorrow, you'd be dead,
my father said flatly.
You're no use to me, picked apart by underground dwellers. This isn't some childish treasure hunt. Even if you do find whatever it is your dead mage made, you still have to turn it into a form of currency I'll accept. You know how long it takes to auction anything really valuable. If this ritual is worth as much as you seem to think, it could take weeks to find a buyer. Even if you slashed the price to the bone to find a buyer tonight, it still takes 24 hours to transfer that much money. You could sell it right now, and you'd still be too late.
He smiled at me and switched to Korean.
Face it, little dog girl. You've lost. There's no shame in being defeated by a greater opponent. But it's time to stop running and come back to your kennel.
If I'd been mad before, I was seeing red now.
The old bastard even had the audacity to pat his leg, literally calling me like a dog. And I clenched my fist so hard I drew blood.
Get out.
He heaved a long-suffering sigh.
Oh, bull. Get out,
I said again, forcing the words through my bared teeth.
You gave your word. I'm not beaten until tonight.
Honor that,
or the whole world will know the sublime Jung is an oathbreaker.
No one would listen,
he said. But I knew I'd gotten him. There was nothing my father cared about more than his pride. Attacking it now was a low blow, but he was the one who'd brought me this far down. He couldn't live with it.
Everyone, I said, repeating the word in every language I knew. You do anything before midnight, and I swear, I will spend the rest of my life making sure everyone knows that the Dragon of Korea is a liar and a cheat.
His chest expanded, and I knew I'd gone too far. I could already smell his fire building, the carbon reek of his magic filling the air. I stared back defiantly, daring him to burn me. The pain would almost be a relief after everything else he'd done. In the end, though, my father was an old dragon. An old, honorable dragon. Famous the world over for his self-control. He got himself back together in the space of a single breath. But his eyes were still terrifying when he looked down on me again.
Have it your way,
he said idly.
Enjoy your day of running wild. It will be the last you ever get.
We'll see, I growled back, lifting my chin high. Now get out of Nick's apartment!
He would have left faster if I hadn't challenged him. He'd clearly been ready to storm out on his own, but I wanted to make him leave on my terms. It was the same stupid power game I was always accusing him of playing. But power was the only language dragons understood. So I spoke it loud and clear, planting my feet as if Nick's cement floor was the hill I'd chosen to die on. For a moment, I thought the Great Young was actually going to take my challenge. But it must have been too far beneath his vaunted dignity. Because in the end, he stepped back into the stairwell, leaving his accessory mortal to close the door behind him. The moment the lock clicked shut, Nick collapsed on the ground.
Christ, Opal!
He gasped, sucking in air like he'd been waiting all this time to breathe.
You didn't tell me your dad was a dragon!
I told you he was an ass, I said. Same thing.
Not the same,
he insisted, turning to stare up at me.
Are you a dragon?
I rolled my eyes. Of course not. I'm human. I've done human magic in front of you.
How do I know it's human?
He said, suddenly suspicious.
I've never seen dragon magic.
Trust me, you'd know, I replied, reaching down to help him up. Dragon magic involves a lot more fire.
If you aren't the dragon, how is your dad one?
Nick demanded, taking my hand. Then his eyes went wide.
Are you a half-dragon?
Humans and dragons can't interbreed, I informed him, determined to nip this in the bud before he got any other wild ideas. The Dragon of Korea isn't my actual father. We all just pretend that he is. It's part of his fantasy of playing head to a respectable family. A fantasy I still couldn't seem to shake myself free of, even in my own mind. I'm one of his mortals, I continued. Every big dragon has some, but Young is a collector. He was up to almost 200 when I left home.
200?
Nick repeated, shocked.
You mean there are 200 people willing to be owned by a dragon?
There's a lot more than that, I said. Those 200 are the choicest specimens selected from thousands of applicants from all over the world. And you're not safe once you get in, either. My father is constantly switching humans out as they get too old or lose his favor. You can imagine the competition that creates. They're crawling over each other for his attention, backstabbing and fawning at his feet in their desperate attempts to curry his favor. It's disgusting.
Absolutely disgusting. Something I knew for a fact, because before I'd gotten old enough to know better, I'd been the same.
He must really like you, though, Nick said. He wouldn't have gone through all this trouble if he didn't.
I shook my head. He likes my mother. She's the queen of his menagerie. She's been first mortal for 30 years now, and she's still going strong. Her only flaw is that she's not a mage. Young couldn't stand the lack, so he made a breeding agreement with one of the European dragons to fix the problem.
Wait,
Nick said, putting up his hands.
A breeding agreement? He bred your mother with another human?
Not actual sex, I said quickly. My mother belongs to Jung, and the first thing to know about dragons is they don't share. It was all done by mail, the way you breed expensive cattle. He got samples from the best specimens he could find, and then hired a lab to blend all the genetics into the best possible combination. The goal was to recreate my mother, except even better, and with magic. But the reality was me. I chuckled. Huge disappointment, as you can see. Nick looked legitimately confused.
How are you a disappointment? You're a hell of a mage.
I'm a terrible mage, I corrected. As for the rest, well, you've seen the caliber of human beauty my father runs around with. I pointed at my face. Even the best genetics don't actually guarantee results. Mom was praying for puberty to work a miracle, but it never panned out. There's a reason Dad's nickname for me is Dog Girl.
You're not a dog girl, Nick said fiercely. You're...
He stopped suddenly, gritting his teeth.
You're not ugly,
he said at last. I shrugged. Maybe not by human standards, but that's not what I'm judged by. That's okay, though. I don't have to live up to the great Jung's expectations anymore, because I'm done being his pet. It was what I'd always been to him. A puppy. A toy. Something he paid attention to when it gave him joy. We were all his playthings. But unlike everyone else in Jung's household, I wasn't okay with that. I refused to worship the ground he walked on, which was why Jung refused to let me go. It didn't matter that I was a dog-faced girl who couldn't dance or sing or master the magic he'd paid so much for me to be born with. I was the one human who didn't act as if he was my moon, sun, and stars, and that stung his pride. He wouldn't stop until he'd put me back in my place, which was why I had to win no matter what. I'd risked everything to get into this game. If I couldn't play as dirty as he did, I'd never be free. We need to get moving, I said grimly, checking the time on my cracked phone. It was 9:10 a.m., just over the 8 hours Rena had said she'd need to crack the security on Dr. Lyle's hand, and 15 hours away from my father's midnight deadline. Is midnight DFZ time, right? I asked Sybil, digging into my bag for my goggles, which had also turned themselves back on, just like my phone. You're not screwing me over again, are you?
I didn't mean to screw you over at all, my AI said,
her voice heard.
I can't help it if I'm hacked. And it wasn't as though I did anything really bad. I put the wrong dates in your calendar, sure. But your father was only trying to get you to come back before you did something you'd really regret. He just wants what's best for you, you know.
I made a disgusted sound, and Nick shook his head.
I told you AIs were a liability. She's totally compromised. You'll have to do a factory reset.
That'll take all day, I said, and it'll completely wipe her personality.
Better than carrying a mole around with you.
I looked down at the goggles in my hands. I knew Nick was right, but I'd had Sybil for 3 years now. Even compromised, she was the closest thing I had to a best friend. I was fully aware of how pathetic that sounded, but it didn't change the way I felt. No matter how cold and practical I tried to be, resetting Sybil felt like killing a sister, and I just couldn't bring myself to do it.
Thank you, Opal,
Sybil whispered.
You're a good person.
Yeah, I muttered. But you are going into the shop for a full security reset the moment I get some spare cash.
I can't believe you're still going to trust that thing,
Nick said as I slid the goggles onto my head. I don't trust her, I said, smiling in relief when my AR heads-up display appeared in front of my eyes again. But I need her. She's still my second brain, and it's not like she can make things any worse. I've already been hung out to dry. What else is my dad going to do? Follow me around all day and trip me?
From the sour look on his face, it was clear Nick thought that was exactly what was going to happen, and I was being an idiot for enabling it. Which, to be fair, I was. To my relief, though, he didn't keep arguing. He just shoved his dripping hair out of his face and turned around.
Your funeral, he said, walking back to his room. You do what you want. I'm going to go finish my shower. Since you've got a hard deadline now, I'm guessing you want to leave as soon as possible.
Yes, please, I said, digging my poncho's collapsible charging circle out of the trash bag I'd shoved all my stuff into. He nodded.
I'll message Rena then. She should be done with the hand soon if she's not already. It's still too hot for us to pick up at her place, so I'll get us a midway location. Anywhere you prefer.
I thought about that for a moment. Somewhere I can get breakfast. Because if this was ending tonight, there was no point in hoarding my money anymore. And if I was going to make a last stand, I wanted to do it on a full stomach. Nick nodded.
I'll see what I can do.
I smiled my thanks at him as he shut the door.
Aw, he's a nice guy after all,
Sybil said in my ear.
Shut it, I growled at her, spreading my poncho's charging circle out on the bare cement floor. Just because I decided not to erase you doesn't mean you're out of the doghouse.
I really am sorry,
she said contritely.
What can I do to make it up to you?
You can tell me which of my files my dad has rummaged through.
Oh, sorry, she said. The admin permissions he enabled explicitly forbid me from giving you that information, but he did leave his current number in case you want to surrender early.
Good to know, I said flatly as I dropped my poncho into the circle and started shoving magic at it. When the spellwork was glowing at what I judged to be the correct level of brightness, I left it to cook and moved on to the rest.
Determined to be a polite charity case, I packed up Nick's cot and tidied everything in the living room. When no sign of my presence remained, I dug a fresh set of clothes out of the bag, changing out of the soft shorts and t-shirt I'd slept in from my thickest pair of cleaner jeans and a heavy cotton button-up. I'd nabbed my tall boots out of Nick's car last night, so I washed them off in the kitchen sink and put them on as well, pulling the protective rubber up to my knees and shoving the legs of my jeans into the tops so that I was completely covered. I was sweating by the time I finished. From the weather app on my heads-up display, I knew it would be even worse once we stepped outside. But I didn't change into something cooler. I'd learned the hard way to never leave bare skin exposed when I was dealing with strange magic. And given how much spell work I'd seen in Dr. Lyle's places so far, strange magic was a given. I just hoped it was the sort that could be turned around for a very quick profit. I hated to admit it. But my dad had had a good point about the trouble of finding a buyer. He would know, too, because humans weren't the only thing he collected. He had a whole lair full of priceless treasures that he was constantly adding to. Years ago, before I'd woken up to the fact that I was being used, he used to take me with him to auctions to train my eye. His logic was that if I couldn't be beautiful, I could at least be useful, which was how I'd gotten him to let me go to school for art history. I'd fed his arrogance and greed, letting him think he'd be getting a world-class expert to curate his hoard if he'd just take the risk of letting me go overseas. The fact that I was legitimately interested in ancient magical art just gave the story more validity. It had been such a good plan. But it wasn't over yet. The DFZ was very different from the international auctions my father traded in. If something had value, you could always find someone to buy it here. Maybe not at the price you wanted, but that was the cost of being in a hurry. First, though, I needed something to sell. I was about to knock on Nick's door when it opened on its own, and Nick burst into the living room. Like me, he was dressed for trouble, in heavy black jeans and black combat boots. His armored jacket was zipped up to his neck, and he was wearing his gun on his hip rather than hidden under his jacket. He had a messenger bag over his shoulder as well this time, and he walked straight past me to the wooden cinder block shelf to start filling it with all manner of things. Nylon rope, zip ties, boxes of ammo, blocks of something gray and clay-like that I really hoped wasn't C4. Not that I'd say anything if it was. This job had jumped the shark on danger ages ago. If he wanted to bring explosives, the only thing I wanted to know was when to duck and cover.
That should do it,
he said when his bag was full.
Ready?
My poncho wasn't quite done, but I was tired of waiting.
Ready, I said, hauling the protective spell-worked plastic over my head. Where are we going?
I'm not staying in the presence of your spy bot,
he replied, opening the door.
Aww,
Sybil whined.
Fair enough, I said over her, shoving my charging circle into my trash bag before throwing it over my shoulder and following him out into the stairwell. So long as Rena has our stuff and there are pancakes, I don't care if we're going to Canada.
It's not in Canada,
he assured me as we climbed the steps.
But there are definitely pancakes.
That was all I needed to know.